All right, folks, we are back on the T-Talk podcast brought to you by Flagstick.com. And this podcast is brought to you by TaylorMade and the all-new Sim Driver. Scotty McLeod, you are sitting in your studio at home. I'm sitting in mine, and we're just having a lovely call over Zoom. Zoom is getting a lot of free pub these days, eh?
Sure is, getting a lot of use as well. I mean, obviously from a stock perspective, it's done quite well of late. And you know what? It's serving a need, and I guess people are really getting used to it, and it's all good.
I was reading today that the NFL draft is going on as scheduled, and they're doing it through, you know, the digital form, and a lot of teams will be using Zoom, and the fear of random people being able to hack through their Zoom, that could bring a lot of fun. I like the idea of the NFL draft being completely digital and someone saying something on a hot mic, not knowing, because they're in these back rooms where they usually would do it. I think it's going to be entertaining through and
well,
through.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough anyways. If you get a group, large enough group on Zoom, you know, you get these random voices coming in from here and there anyway. It's a little easier when we're one-on-one, but if you've been in some of the groups, when you get a dozen people or more, sometimes it's a little harder. So yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean, I don't think they're worried as much maybe about Zoom bombs now. They've upgraded the security a little bit and done a few extra things, but hey, you never know. And you're right, it could make it exciting, and who knows, it might change a pick for somebody by accident.
I'll give everyone one tip for working from home using Zoom: mute yourself always, unmute when you have to talk. It's pretty simple. Not everyone can talk at the same time, but I digress. That's one free tip. The next one's going to cost you. Let's move on to the world of golf, though. Enough about streaming your video calls to people. a lot of golf tournament updates going on. We're going to get into all of them. But first, we're going to talk about the Flagstick Open. We have new dates for the Flagstick Open. Originally, it was going to be May 16th and 17th, and we've actually moved it to August. Scotty, why don't you give the people that have signed up and a rundown of why, but also, maybe we'll talk about what this tournament is in the first. Like, again, we talk about it as much as we can. But let's talk about what this tournament is overall.
Yeah, it's our Flagstick Open Amateur Championship, which, we've been involved in running tournaments for 20 years now. And this is traditionally, in the last few years, gone to be a spring event. Being held at Equinel and Kempville. And, you know, obviously we've been monitoring the situation. We've been, working back and forth with Equinel, talking to our sponsors as well. TaylorMade Adidas are involved with this tournament. And we just made a decision that, we had a backup date and we're going to go with that. We're going to push things back to August 15th, 16th. And that was difficult, really, to find that date because, you know, there's a lot of other events going on. We were trying to make sure that our event didn't conflict with anything that was out there. So great response so far. We've already had a good number of people that are signed up for the tournament. And actually, after we announced that the date was being changed, we actually had more people signing up. And I think part of that is they just want to lock up their spot, too.
Absolutely. Plus, now people are going to get in tip-top shape. I assume usually people are practicing this time. No one's practicing unless you've found a field, which I've been looking for farmers fields with driving around the truck with the clubs in the back, just trying to find a field where I'm not going to get caught and bringing a mat with me just to create my own driving range. So if anyone in the Kingston area wants to let me hit golf balls into their field, please let me know. But now people are going to be in hopefully in good form. Again, we don't know what's going on. No. From a future standpoint, I think you and I have both kind of discussed on here and off here that neither one of us really do expect to be playing golf in June even. This is a good thing, and we're hoping that, you know, things progress and we're playing the Flagstick Open again this year, and as it's, you know, a weekend everyone looks forward to every single year.
Yeah, and that's all you can do. You plan and you go forward. And I think that's one of the things that we saw a lot this week as we look at what has happened with some of the tournament schedules with the pro events and things around the world. The discussion at first, everybody was, you know, cancellation, cancellation, cancellation. Well, now we actually have some discussion where we have some calendars coming out. We have some prospective calendars coming out. Again, we don't know what's going to happen as we go forward, but, you know, it's nice to be able to dig in and start planning and start looking at some changes in the schedule and have something to look forward to.
Absolutely. One tournament, though, that we will not be seeing this year is the Open Championship. A lot of speculation over the last couple weeks that this would be canceled, and they have officially canceled the tournament for this year. So the next time they will be playing is 2021 at Royal St. George, only the second time it's been canceled since, or sorry, the first time since it's been canceled since World War II. I don't know if they canceled it prior. So in the recent history, let's say twice ever, you know, tough to see, unfortunate. But it, you know, I think it just, when you, the seasons in Europe are a little bit different. Let's remember that as well. If you're pushing this back to September, what are we going to, what would we have even gotten out of an Open Championship if it even did that could play? Have been
That could have been a dicey situation. And really, I mean, you know, the difficulty that people don't realize is this, you know, we talked about it last week on the show, is it's not necessarily just about the people on the golf course. There's a lot of infrastructure that's got to be put in place before the event happens. So, you know, when they were looking at a date before that was mid-July, you know, here we are sitting in April. I know last year being at Portrush in May when the Open again was going to be there in July, you know, all the grandstands are already up. There's leaderboards are up. There's a lot of tents, a lot of things that are in place. And, you know, they just couldn't do all the preparations that they needed to do to even run it at a minimal level and keep their workers and their staff safe. And, you know, there's just other things that people need to focus on. Right.
You are right. It's just a golf tournament. They've obviously, it's not technically even canceled. They've just postponed it to next year. The tournaments will remain at the same place. The 150th Open will be played at St. Andrews, where it should have been played all along. Everything's fine. It's not that big of a deal. And there are some positives of other tournaments that are just being postponed right now, including the U.S. Open.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, now we just have 2022 is when we look forward to St. Andrews. Everybody was thinking 2021. And, you know, again, this gives them sort of a resolution to kind of be away from it and then kind of just, you know, take care of everything that has to be taken care of. And then, you know, we'll get to the Open in due course. And as you say, other events, you know, U.S. Open, we're now hearing that, you know, originally scheduled for June 15th to 21st at Wingfoot. It will stay at Wingfoot. It's just been rescheduled now to be September 14th to 20th. Now, as part of that, the USGA did say they are not going to be running the U.S. Senior Open this year and the U.S. Senior Women's Open. But the fact that, you know, the U.S. Open is still on the calendar, it's just going to be a late summer event, and Wingfoot will be just fine for that. Again, gives them time to you know, take care of things down there. They've got a lot of bigger things to focus on in New York, and we still have a U.S. Open to look forward to.
Absolutely. We also have a PGA Championship to look forward to, now being moved to August. Originally was going to be in May, May 11th to 17th, but that will remain at San Francisco in August. Of them all, this is the one I'm probably the most worried about right now, just because of where this is happening. San Francisco is, you know, not in a great place right now with COVID-19. Not that really anywhere is, to be fair, but this is one that I would say of all of them you may see postponed again, or potentially actually cancel. Just, you know, I'm clearly not a health professional and know all about it, but this is the one that really seems early to me. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, possibly. And we don't know what restrictions they're going to put on Harding Park, that facility. It's sort of tied into the city a little bit. You know, the PGA could choose to move it elsewhere. And this one is actually the one that's sort of funny. It's gone back to its natural, more closer to its natural date where it had been for many years, being that it was, you know, mid-August. It used to fall in after the Open. So it's not going to seem as unusual there as maybe the U.S. Open in September or the, you know, getting to the Masters, which we'll get to in a second, of where it changed to in the schedule.
Absolutely. The Masters is going to be weird, but also really cool too. Augusta, Georgia in November, something you never thought you'd see. It also cool that it's going to be like, you're not going to have to wait as long, right? I assume we're going to go right back to April, and it's, you know, that break's going to feel like nothing, which is amazing. One thing to note, talking to a couple caddies over the weekend, trying to confirm these dates. And luckily one of the caddies I was talking to had booked literally every single week for hotels from the start of October all the way till the end of November.
Wow.
Because if he didn't, he would have been looking at $1,300 USD a night for hotels that week. Insanity.
That's crazy. And I mean, that's generally what happens anyways. I know a lot of people will stay, you know, an hour away. They'll stay, you know, up in Columbia. The Aiken is a popular spot just across the river in South Carolina. And I mean, I just had a look through today, and it's kind of interesting because, you know, I sent you a quick text to see the difference of, obviously it's a ghost town right now in Augusta because there is no Masters going on and of, you know, the COVID pandemic. And there is rooms as low as $5 a night this week that you could stay there. But obviously, you know, we start to look at some of those hotels that would be, you know, $78 right now. You know, that same two-star hotel is going for $400 a night in November. And I guarantee you right now, there's probably only a couple rooms left in those. And, you know, that's no different, I guess, than normal. But like you said, it's going to be a little bit different to have it there in November. I had a look into a couple things. The amount of daylight is there in November.
Yeah, I saw your tweet about that. A little bit different and concerning. I wonder how they packed that in. Are we looking at maybe threesomes all on the weekends?
Well, I mean, a lot of people were speculating first that maybe it'd be a smaller field, but we heard a little bit about that today. But yeah, I could see some, you know, double T's, some other things that are happening because there is 2 hours less daylight. Temperatures are still pretty good. They're only a couple Fahrenheit less that time of year. And it's actually a drier time than April. So there's less chance of rain that time of year. And when we look at some other things right now, they've said, I guess the field, they've locked in the top 50. And, you know, basically when you look at the field, it'd be about 95 right now. But they've also said that anybody that qualifies now during the season will be qualified for the tournament. So, we could have a little bit bigger field, and they'll have to see how they're going to manage that come November.
It's interesting. They would do that rather than push them to next year. But, you know, maybe we're going to have one of the most epic Masters ever. Who knows? And
yeah, it's hard to say. And I mean, talking to a couple of people down there as well, they said, you know, there's occasionally a double bloom, believe it or not, of the azaleas. And sometimes they'll occasionally get a bloom late in the year. I don't expect that to happen necessarily, but, you know, it'll be neat just to see and think about it. Now for us, we start to look at, watching golf and being involved with golf, as you mentioned, you know, we're going to have this big surge of golf. If everything happens the way it's laid out right now, we'll be talking about golf late through the fall, and then boom, we're not going to have much turnaround time and we'll be back to major season right again. So, you know, we're going to go from nothing to really a boom of golf content.
It's going to be fun, exciting, and let's just hope we can get there and, you know, everyone play their part and stay inside so we can get there sooner, hopefully, rather than later. I'm sure you've heard it everywhere, and we just figured one last time. A couple other interesting news items. Trevor Immelman was named the international team captain for the 2021 President's Cup. Was this really important to do right now? You couldn't have waited a couple months after everything else that's going on?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the reasoning was behind that as far as them announcing that. You know, he's got to get things ready, I guess. But it was kind of surprising, actually. They called the PGA Tour, called the press conference, teleconference, and I thought maybe they were going to announce 2023. Maybe they were going to change up the qualifications. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And there you go. They announced Trevor Immelman as the international captain. They did not mention who is going to be the U.S. captain yet. So that we have to look forward to. And yeah, I'm not sure why the timing behind it. Obviously, it was probably planned for this time. Maybe they just thought, hey, you know what? Let's put something out there that people can kind of focus on. That's not a cancellation. That's not an adjustment in postponing a tournament or something. It's something to look forward to.
Absolutely. So let's do some speculation then. Who do you think is going to be the U.S. captain?
I don't know. I mean, if we start to look through who were, you know, the captain this year being Tiger Woods, I don't know if he's going to return as that. I certainly could see, you know, Stricker back in the mix there. We have to kind of look at who were his assistants. I think it was Couples, Johnson, Zach Johnson. So Zach Johnson could be your guy. Steve Stricker, but he's the Ryder Cup captain, so I'm not sure on that one. What about you? What do you think? Who could be in there, and who could they make the captain?
Here's what I think happened. Right after Tiger was named captain, Phil got on the phone and was like,
"Yeah, true.
You better give this to me next year. I'm turning 50. Yeah. If you're giving Tiger it now, I want it next year. I want to be captain. You know, don't do this to me like this. I know he hasn't been an assistant captain in the President's Cup that I remember.
No, but he's wanted to play. That's why.
He's
been playing.
Yeah, played on every Ryder Cup you can think of forever. Yeah. So, yeah, for me, maybe Phil. I feel like that would be at least newsworthy. Again, you know, we talked down about the President's Cup, but we actually had a really good one last year, which was fun. But it still doesn't bring me much. But still, I think Phil would be an interesting pick. And I think he'd be a very fun captain. One of those captains that people would want to go play for as well.
Yeah, I think you're bang on with that. I mean, if I look back at when the President's Cup was in Montreal, I remember writing about that and the fact that even being in a press conference, you know, Phil was a definite leader, even though he wasn't a captain back then. And even at press conferences, all the other players would defer to him. You'd have five players up there and somebody would ask a question in the media room and they'd all turn and look at Phil because they knew he was going to come up with an answer. And it was probably, it took the pressure off the other guys because maybe they just didn't want to, you know, be taken out of context or anything like that. Easier just to turn to Phil because Phil's fine. He's confident. He's going to give an answer no matter what, and he's going to stand behind it. So that type of leadership definitely would play well. And so I think you're bang on in this assessment that, you know, if he's willing, if he's not trying to play, and even if he is trying to play, sort of like, you know, the Tiger sort of thing, I think he's probably your guy you go to.
Yeah, I'm sure Patrick Reed also called Ness to be the captain. Your few years, hopefully never away.
I thought we weren't supposed to talk about him anymore.
Yeah, I know, but he's fun to hate. Well, why don't we move it on to our interview this week? We had a great interview. You were able to sit down with a lovely woman in golf. Who did you sit down with, and what did we chat about?
Yeah, we had a good discussion with Leslie Hawkins, and Leslie is the general manager of Adidas Golf Canada. And, you know, she's been in the golf industry for more than a quarter century, seen a lot in the industry, and she's taken a really strong role, not only as just the GM of Adidas Canada, but a mentorship role in the industry of trying to help break the glass ceiling and to help mentor a lot of women to come into the game and grow themselves in the game and to be an active part of the industry. And, you know, it was fun just to chat with her, and I think people were really enjoy this interview.
This episode of Tee Talk is brought to you by TaylorMade and the all-new Sim Driver. This year, TaylorMade wanted to find golfers more speed and forgiveness in any way, shape, or form. Well, shape one. So they went and changed the driver head, which allowed them to make it both fast and forgiving where you need it, the downswing. It's called Sim, and TaylorMade's tour players are loving it. But the real reason they changed the shape was to help make all golfers better. The all-new Sim Driver. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca to learn more about the all-new Sim family.
All right, we want to welcome to the podcast, good friend, longtime friend, Leslie Hawkins, the general manager of Adidas Golf Canada, a Canadian golf industry veteran. And you know what? We're looking forward to this conversation because we've been waiting to have this conversation for quite some time. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. I don't know that I like being called a veteran, but that's okay. It has been a long time.
Yeah, I mean, we met each other quite some time ago. I won't really get into it too far back, but, you know, there's something to be said for being a veteran in the golf industry. It gives you a different perspective in the industry. And obviously that's helped you going into your role as the GM at Adidas Golf Canada for the last 3 years. But why don't you tell us a little bit about your golf origin story and how you came to the game?
Well, it's so I am originally a Scot. My mom is Canadian and my dad is Scottish. And like a true Scot, I was raised around a golf course. I did not play originally, but I caddied for my dad. And that was, we traveled quite a bit around the world with his job. And so I caddied in many different places. And then we moved to Montreal in the 80s, and he was traveling for work. So he would leave Monday morning, come back Friday night, and then on Saturday mornings, he would go to the golf course. And so finally, being the sassy 15-year-old that I was, and things
you wouldn't be sassy, come on.
And I finally said, well, if I'm ever going to see my dad, then I had better actually take up this silly game. So I started playing golf out at Summerlee, and under the tutelage of both my dad and Duke Doucette and yeah. Hope Knowlson, and really great group of people at Summerlee, I joined their junior program. And there's a few of us still from that junior program that are part of the industry, including J Jimmy Vondette, who is the head professional there at Summerlee, Gary Lagden, both the Steve Doucette. So yeah, there's quite a few people from there. And so, yeah, it's now, golf is now being, you know, a huge chunk of my life, both personally and professionally.
What attracted you to the game besides the fact that you could spend some time with your dad? Was there something about it, even when you were traveling and seeing courses, was there anything in particular that sort of appealed to you?
Really, it started with just spending time with my dad. And then my sister played as well. So, and my mom was an avid bird watcher. So it became the four of us would go out. And my mom would walk and my sister and I and my dad would play, and it was unique family time. And that was really the big attraction. The fact that I had the benefit for the first few years of just spending my entire summer at the golf course, right? I was one of those golf course rats that you get dropped off in the morning and picked up at the end of the day. And I would just spend tons of time there. And so being a true competitor, also like the fact that if you worked on your game that I could get my handicap down. It's such a great game. It really is. And I love the fact that it's individual and it can also be team as well.
So you went to McGill, and when did you, and now I know you first started not in the golf industry, but did you have any intentions to work in the golf industry at all?
So, not originally. When I was going to McGill, I needed a job in the summer, and I decided to apply to a bunch of places, one of which was Elmridge with Andrew Phillips, and I started working there for actually all three summers of McGill, and working in the pro shop, and loved it. I, you know, don't know that I loved the 6 days a week, and working nights and all that stuff, but it was great environment. I just loved the people. And I just got to the point that once I graduated, I was like, well, I'm definitely not going back to golf, because I'm not interested in working 6 days a week and not having a full job the full year. So I left and went and did another job in the aluminum business. And I very quickly realized that is so not my calling. was never very good at chemistry, so that was not a good sign. And ended up coming back to golf. And when I was about a year into my job in the aluminum company, I said, this isn't for me. And I said, there is only one place I want to go, and that's back to golf. I miss the people and the camaraderie, the community. And there's just so many good people, many of whom have become really lifelong friends. And so I applied literally to every place within a 2-hour radius of Montreal, and ended up starting in April of 1994 at Cobra.
And I think that's where we met back then. Back in those days, hard to believe, but I guess we are dating ourselves, but yes. You know, and you've had a number of roles in the industry. You know, you've progressed a lot. You've gained, you know, a fairly prominent position in the golf industry. And what did that mean to you then to evolve to where you're at today to, you know, to attain that position as the GM at Adidas Golf Canada?
So you are right. I did have quite a few different roles in the industry, and I think this role with Adidas Golf Canada, it's just, honestly, it's been the culmination of a really long career. And just trying to, you know, find out what the next step is for me, try to break through some of the glass ceiling that really is out there, some of the gender bias. And for me, it was the ultimate opportunity to put together sort of a dream team of people that were already in the Adidas organization, and then bring in some others that were some in the golf industry and some actually not in the golf industry, and kind of build our own team here in Canada. And it's been an amazing experience for 3 years, I would say, for sure.
Do you think a lot of that creativity for you, I mean, like you said, it sort of comes from your experience. So are there particular things that you think you brought to that position that were maybe different than how it was done before?
So I would say some of the creativity comes from my background in marketing. The fact that in all of the roles that I have, I've sort of built them into GM style roles, even though that wasn't necessarily the job title. So I always took care of product and marketing, oversaw sales. They never reported into me prior to this, but there was always, you know, I was the one running the sales meetings, for example, always involved with finance and forecasting and procurement. So I sort of, you know, I have a thirst for knowledge. So for me, it was every role I had, I tried to learn as much as I possibly could. And I think that has helped in particularly in this particular role, that it really does cover every inch of the business itself.
So for you, I mean, as you said, you've got a lot of skills, you've got a natural acquisition, you know, you've done this natural progression of doing things in the industry, but you're also smart enough that, you know, you rely on other people as well, and you know that their input is necessary. One thing that I know that you're very active with is your creator board that you have for Adidas. What's the influence of that for you, whether it be product, marketing, anything that you're dealing with, and what input does that give you that helps you do your job every day?
So yeah, you're absolutely right that I do. I mean, the best leaders in the world are those that surround themselves with people that are smarter than them. And I definitely have tried to surround myself with the right people, not only internally, but also with the creator board. So originally, when we divested of TaylorMade, there was a, you know, an advisory board that was part of TMAG, as we called it then. And as we divested, we thought, well, do we want to continue with something similar or not? And is there value in it? And there really isn't a brand out there that is specifically in soft goods that has a creator board. But I thought it was really important for us to make sure that we're really, really connected. We're connected through our sales reps, but that head office was directly connected to a lot of key accounts. And so we wanted to make sure that as we, you know, walked on our own, that we had a group of people that were also out there helping us and guiding us. So we put together basically 9 leaders in the industry, and we were very selective with who they were because we wanted to make sure that they, not only were they influencers in the business, but they had really strong business acumen and were very involved in the soft goods business. So I specifically wanted people that could talk fashion, could talk about that part of the business, which is very different from the hard goods. And their role with us is we basically bring them inside the ropes and we share with them what we're working on. They've already seen spring of 21, for example, and what we're planning. We ask for feedback. They are a great group of people that they don't hold back, which is exactly what we want. And then they bring ideas to us of here's something else. And before we make big decisions as much as possible, we try to just check in with them and say, so are we completely out to lunch, or, you know, how do you think this will go? So they've been, you know, an integral part of our team.
I mean, I guess for a lot of companies, I mean, it's really easy to be internal and, you know, you always think whatever you're working on next is the greatest thing to come out. So they're the ones that sort of give you a little bit of a check, right? And they sort of, you know, say, maybe you're not on track here, or maybe you are. So.
Well, and they're really good to, sometimes we obsess about things that really we have no reason to obsess about. And they're very quick to say, I don't know why you're worried about that, because that's actually not what you need to be focusing your attention on. And it's actually a breath of fresh air. So love the honesty. They definitely don't hold back.
Now you've got 2 big things that are happening this year, one on the footwear side of it, one on the fashion side of it. in Code Chaos as far as your shoe introduction, which has got a lot of attention at the PGA Merchandise Show this year. And then also your Style Evolution, which is really neat. If people haven't checked this out, they certainly should have a look and just even search Style Evolution on social media and see some of the posts that people have had so far of some of the interesting outfits that they've worn in the past, progressing to something that's a little bit more modern. Why don't you tell us a little bit about those projects and what that meant for your company this year?
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting 2020. We certainly don't need to rehash what's happening now, but Code Chaos is definitely our blockbuster story for 2020. And it was our opportunity to kind of reinvent footwear. And yes, we did make a big splash at the PGA show in January. And it's really what we've done is we kind of took all the guardrails away from our design team and said, just go out and design the product that you think will provide the best performance that, you know, build it from the ground up. And they basically created a shoe that provides the best of all worlds, that it provides the stability that you need of a spiked shoe, but with the versatility of a spikeless shoe. And it looks totally different. It is quite chaotic, which is why the name is so perfect for it. But the feedback we've had from our players has been tremendous, and can't undervalue the amount of input that we get from the DJs and Sergios and Xanders and John Rahms of the world that, once again, they're another good group to talk to because they don't hold back. They spend a lot of time in our product. So they're very excited about Code Chaos. And you know, after the PGA show, a couple weeks later, we had the Phoenix Open, the Waste Management, sorry. You know, the biggest show on earth, or the biggest party on earth at 16th. Yes. And we had John Rahm wearing Code Chaos there, and he did a nice tribute to Pat Tillman on his shoes. And so it's great product. And once we get playing golf this year, it will definitely be product that will be on more feet. And, you know, as we're in these crazy times, our idea was, let's have some fun with where has people's style come and how far has it come. And so we created this social media conversation with the hashtag of Style Evolution that has basically people's pictures of how far their style has come. And, you know, Mark Sacchino had a great one right at the beginning where he was wearing his plus fours with these Argyle socks to now being, you know, he looks like Sergio Garcia and, you know, very sleek and well put together. So it's just an opportunity for us to have some fun and to provide some levity in these challenging times.
Definitely levity. I mean, looking at some of those photos, I'm pretty scared to look back at maybe some of the things that I've had. I don't think there's enough room for that many pleats in some of the photos. Scary.
Well, I totally agree. As I look through photos, I you know, the one I had posted was, you know, when I went and played in Myrtle Beach with my dad, and I don't know, I had like white snake curly hair. It was not good, right? And more pleats, as you say. Yeah. But I know what to do with it. It was pretty
I'm sure it looked great at the time. That's what we all convince ourselves.
That's right, exactly.
Well, one thing that was happening at the PGA show was there was a lot of discussion when I was in your booth and talking to designers like Mason Dennison, for an example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's consistent with what your CEO worldwide has said in the annual report as well, is that, you know, your brand is working hard towards sustainability, looking at 2024 and not, you know, producing anything without the exception of using, you know, recycled polyester for those purposes. But where's Adidas heading? I mean, where's this brand heading? I mean, there is that big focus and you've had that in various products already this year, but why is that such an important thing to Adidas?
So to be honest, sustainability has been part of our kind of culture, I would say, for much longer than we've been talking about. And it started with, you know, all of the work that we do with our factories, making sure that they've got workplace standards with our vendors. So if you want to do work with us, that there's very strict things that we expect from you. And we've used, you know, we've partnered with companies like Parley to use diverted plastic from the ocean to create product, not just footwear, but apparel. So it's been sort of ongoing for, honestly, I would say about the last 20 years, but in varying stages. And now we've really had to put the stake in the ground and say, by 2024, our global mandate is that 100% of our footwear and apparel will be made from recycled polyester. And so in order to do that, honestly, golf has been really quite at the forefront in terms of a business unit within Adidas to make sure that we really are embracing that. So for 2020, we have over 75% of our golf products that are already meeting that criteria, and we're well on our way. Our plan is really to start ramping up the conversation. We introduced some products around what was supposed to be the players. So we introduced that this year. We have more and more products with either Prime Green or Prime Blue product in it. And it will just become part of the everyday conversation. And I think, you know, where we're going with this is that in the not too distant future, sustainability won't just be a word. It won't look like a marketing play or a product play. It will be just part of everyone's just regular vocabulary. And the assumption, I think, will be that everything's sustainable. And if it isn't, that it will get called out in that way. And I really think that the whole industry, all industry, honestly, just needs to ramp up their sustainability efforts. And with this whole situation that we have going on right now, I think it's been really interesting to see the environmental impact and positive environmental impact in many cases. So ultimately, it's just trying to make sure that we're at the forefront of the conversation, and that this is not a commercial play. This is truly at the core of what we believe. And, you know, we all take personal ownership in it, not only business-wise, but also in our own homes as well. So we kind of live it every day.
Perfect. Now, you mentioned earlier, you talked a little bit about the glass ceiling, and I know that's something I've wanted to talk to you about a little bit. You know, you really become an advocate for women in the game, women in the sports industry as it is. Why is that so important to you? I mean, I think that's pretty obvious why it's important, but why don't you tell us from your sense and your direction why that's so important?
So, I think the reason it's important for me is obviously it's the game itself. It's provided me a great career, both on and off the course. And I want to share that love and passion. And I think in all of the talks that I've done, my message is pretty consistent that to me, everyone should be playing golf, irrespective of age, ethnicity, ability, or gender. And that it's really the only sport where all genders and all ages, all ethnicities kind of share the field of play so that you can have everybody playing together. It's really also one of the only sports that you can do your entire life, from the time you can walk to the time you can no longer walk. And in some cases, if you're in a wheelchair, you can still play. So I just think that it's so unique in that way. Having teenagers, I can tell you the benefit of golf for me is being able to spend some time with my kids where they don't have a device, and the kind of the ability to make sure that they kind of just focus on the conversation. So for me, I would say there's definitely been challenges in my career because of my gender, but I was challenged early on by a close friend who said, "I don't understand why you stay in golf. It is such an uphill battle for you. I don't understand why you wouldn't just leave." And my answer was, I strongly believe that the only way that you can affect change is to roll up your sleeve, be on the inside, and drive that change. So I've, you know, been really fortunate in my position to speak at some conferences, tell my story, try to kind of share some of my learnings, and really to make sure that the next generation has got fewer barriers.
Do you think that's changed, or have you seen that change internally in the industry? Has it gotten better, or what's your perception of that?
Yeah, I think it's gotten better. it's so slow, to be honest. I really wish it would move along faster. And it became more representative of truly our population. But I would say the interesting thing is that the next generation of females in the golf industry are vocal, and they're not afraid to speak up, and they're not afraid to say when something isn't right. And I love it. I mean, I would have loved to be that bold and upfront when I was starting my career. I think there's a comfort in there being a lot more women in the industry, that there is a shared voice of actually this needs to change.
Yeah. And I mean, are you seeing that even in the acceptance of, let's talk about, you know, apparel and footwear, and we're seeing, you know, shops having more options and more selections. I mean, I know myself with a daughter in the game, mm-hmm. with a wife who, you know, enjoys the game, you know, that was always a challenge early on. And even when I was a retail course owner, it was hard sometimes from a supplier standpoint to find suppliers who could provide product that the customers really wanted. So do you feel that's part of it as well? And that's the evolution too?
Yeah, I think there's definitely more product that's out there. I think people are taking the women's game more seriously. I mean, there's a million stats out there, and I could turn into, you know, full statistician here. I'm going to save you that. But sure. There is some major benefits of focusing on the women's game and having product for the women and changing the way your golf course or your brand is interacting with women. I call our women consumers the chief influence officers, because they are influencing everything that's happening in the home. They're influencing more and more in business, and they are definitely influencing the vast majority of consumer spending. So if you're not finding a way to talk to women, you are absolutely missing a major opportunity. And there's more and more brands that have started to recognize that. And I think the style change that you're also seeing in women's is helping. You know, we used to call it the shrink it and pink it, was the whole concept of we'll take a man's shirt and we'll just make it smaller and then turn everything pink. And there's our women's line. I think thankfully we've, you know, evolved from that. And so there's definitely a lot more fun in the fashion. And I think some of the dress codes have started to calm down a little bit, being less restrictive. You know, I don't get asked to measure the length of my shorts anymore, which is good. So I think there's all of those things that are definitely helping.
Now, a lot of these things we're talking about here are tangible things. I mean, there used to be a lot of talk about, you know, changing things in the women's game, but there's a lot more action that's happening now. And I'm going to give you a lot of credit for doing that for some people, of not only, you know, kind of buoying them on, but being involved with different things that are making a difference. And, you know, one of them that I looked at was that DCM Power Up initiative that I know you're involved with, that committee. Yeah. And, you know, that's providing female Canadian golfers with some funding, a bursary, so that they can pursue their dreams of playing professional golf. I mean, so why did you get involved with that, and kind of what are the attributes that, you know, you look for in those players?
Yeah, so it was a great program that was originally started by Greg Cochran, who is absolutely my mentor. He's at DCM, and he just saw some injustices happening in the industry and didn't like what he was seeing, quite honestly. And so him and the PGA of Canada and some of his associates basically reached out to myself and a couple of other people and just said, we want to do something. We're not sure what to do. Can you help? And it was probably one of the best lunches I have ever had, because it was finally seeing somebody that was so driven to change. And it was such a great opportunity to just jump on board. So what we do is we select, now it started as five, is now expanded to seven. So we choose seven up and coming golfers, professional golfers, Five of which are Canadian, one of which is a PGA of Canada professional, and then one international. In this particular case, she's an American. And we look at them in terms of how they're playing, what their specific needs are. In some cases, people are like, you know, I'm running out of money, or here's my story. We also look at their involvement with the DCM Women's Championship, and just the overall kind of application that they send in. And it really becomes very revealing on what's important to them and why it would be so meaningful for them to be a bursary recipient. And then with the bursary, yes, there is some cash component, but it's more than that. We try to give them sort of a toolkit to give them every opportunity to succeed. So our friends at RBC give them financial planning. So the financial planning as an independent professional golfer is not that easy. So they have that benefit from RBC. Natasha Staniszewski from TSN obviously is really good at social media and building brand. Adidas Golf, we provide everybody with apparel and footwear to make sure that they look the part. And then our friends at DCM give them the personal toolkit with financial money as the finances as well. So it really becomes an all-encompassing toolkit to really help them get started or keep moving or to keep building on the momentum that they already have. In reaching out to the players and sending them congratulations and having the opportunity to meet them in person at the championship, they're so incredibly grateful. They're a wonderful group of women, and it really becomes a proud moment when you see that they're starting to achieve their goals and that, you know, you've had even just a small smidgen of a influence on that. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I think some of those tools will help them as well, you know, beyond golf, which is really important because, you know, you're not always going to stay in the game. You're not always going to, you know, pursue it professionally for the rest of your life. So right. If you can provide those extra tools for them that can help them that way, that's obviously beneficial as well. All right, why don't we sort of wander off a little bit back to you a little bit. You know, what's the best part of golf for you? You mentioned a little bit about, you know, your family and your involvement, but is there something now that's different that appeals to you a little bit more as you look ahead to maybe other things in your life of being, having golf involved?
Wow. That's an all involved question.
It's a big one.
It's a big one. So I guess if I was to do my next step beyond golf, and it would be obviously still playing the game, but I'd like to be able to have an opportunity to open more doors to the next generation of females, whether it's in golf or quite frankly in anything. I think more needs to be done, and I think with years of experience, and I don't know that there's many stories that I haven't either experienced myself or heard, that I could definitely provide some guidance for next gen to try and avoid some of those pitfalls.
Do you think that's for you? I mean, is that just, do you feel that's an obligation, or is it just something within you that drives you that maybe, you know, maybe you didn't have all those opportunities that, you know, you can provide those to someone else, or at least help them out from a mentorship basis?
Yeah, I don't know that it's, I mean, the game of golf has given so much to me, both personally and professionally. I don't know that it's an obligation as much as it's truly just a personal desire. I was asked at one conference, who was my female mentor? And I was stumped. And I had to dig deep to find somebody who I would see as a mentor who was also female. And unfortunately in the industry, a lot of the mentors I had were male. It's all good. They are fantastic people, but it kind of stopped me in my tracks with how few opportunities there are, even people that I could have reached out to who would have been a mentor who was female. And so at that moment I said, okay, that has to change. And so, I have had multiple opportunities with young up-and-comers who have reached out, and they've said, I know you're super busy, but could you help? And I'm like, I'll change my schedule, no problem. Let me help you in any way that I can, so that they're never stuck on that question.
Well, I'm going to leave it at that, because I think that's a great message. And I think that's for something for a lot of people to really think about in the industry as well. And the fact that mentorship is very important, no matter your gender, no matter your role. And we certainly appreciate you coming on to talk to us about this. And, you know, I valued your friendship over the years. I valued seeing you as a leader in the industry. And you are somebody that I look up to in the industry, even though we're a similar age. But thanks for coming on, telling us a little bit about your story, and sharing what Adidas is doing in golf and what you're doing in golf personally as well.
Well, I truly appreciate this opportunity, Scott. It's the feelings are absolutely mutual. I have great respect for you. It's been amazing to watch your career flourish, and I really appreciate this opportunity. It's amazing. Keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Thanks, Leslie. Really appreciate that interview. Really enjoy speaking with you all the time. And, you know, kind words there, and also, you know, some great words about this industry and how things can change in the industry. And we look forward to having you back on the podcast again. All right, let's get to something here. I mean, it is not Masters Week. We wish it was Masters Week. It is unfortunately delayed till later in the year, but that didn't stop us from going and breaking down another Masters, probably one of the ones that the current generation really thinks about a lot. The 1997 Masters. And I don't know about you, Stefan, but how much have you ever seen of this Masters?
First time I sat down and watched, obviously you see the highlights. It's Tiger Woods. You've probably seen pretty much a lot of it. I think I really forgot how big his lead was going into Sunday.
Yeah, it's
that
crazy.
Like, even after turning it on, like the first opening segment, I actually paused YouTube and went back, because I thought it was like a montage they had built, and then they were going to cut between holes, just because the talk of it was they didn't need to play the rest, which they didn't really. No. You know, he's going in with what, nine shot lead to start the day. So they really didn't need to play it, but you got to. Who knows? Maybe you have the great white shark moment out there again. Obviously didn't happen for Tiger, but just the opening montage, hearing them just talk about how there's a new generation in town, move over, like greatest player of all time, hadn't even won a major yet. It was just crazy. And then you go, and then it was like, do I even need to watch this at this point? Cause like there's zero excitement, but it was cool to watch for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that nine stroke start, I can remember him starting that day. And I think, you know, I said it was like a coronation really for the whole day. And obviously it could have gone sideways, but the odds were pretty slim based on how he was playing. So right from the start, you know, that's all they could talk about was, you know, the records that he was going to be setting and how far ahead. And, you know, it sort of felt bad because, you know, they wanted to watch it because it was so historic. They wanted the camera to be on him. But, you know, guys like Constantino Rocca that's playing.
Who was that? I had never even heard of that player. When I actually like had to Google him. I don't even think he had a Wikipedia page based on like, and he'd even end up finishing. Oh, he finished T5, but still did you ever hear from him again after that, really?
Not that much. And I think you have to go back and watch the Open Championship with his playoff with John Daly at St. Andrews. And he was in the playoff with him, but, you know, a guy who was in some Ryder Cups and things like that. But, you know, you feel bad for him. I mean, he's out there playing and, you know, he's a 40-year-old guy playing with a 21-year-old. He's getting absolutely lapped. There's no way he's catching Tiger. There's just absolutely no way. He just doesn't have the skill set to be able to do that. And it just felt like, I don't know, there was like pity camera views to go back and show the other players, because, you know, what could the announcers be excited about besides Tiger? I mean, really, anything else is just secondary, really.
Absolutely. I mean, Tom Kite was out there a bunch as well. Here's the problem with Tom Kite. I cannot watch him without pausing whatever I'm watching or anytime they talk about him, just to look up that YouTube video where he just shanks one right into someone's dome about 10 feet away from him. Like, easily, it's horrifying. But every single time I see Tom Kite, hear the name Tom Kite, it's the first video I go to, and it's so bad.
I mean, that's pretty funny, actually. And I think that's one of the neat things of going back and watching these is just getting your perspective being, you know, 20 years apart. And the fact that I was watching golf a lot at this time, and these are more memorable for me, but my perspective was different than yours. And I think, you know, I've seen more and more people going back into these archives, and even for me prompting them to go and do it. And it's really interesting to see their observations and how they see it versus how I see it or how someone else would.
Absolutely. And like the weird thing, we talked about off the top with this one, like he goes in with 9-stroke lead. I've never even had a Masters in my lifetime. In my lifetime, obviously this one, but when I've actually started watching golf, you know, I took up the game pretty late. I think I was 18, 19 years old. So this wasn't, you know, something I was watching at 7 years old, but I've never had one going in with that big lead where it's like, you don't even need to watch this Sunday, but you do. So that was weird. Not as good of style as last week when we talked about the no. The 70s having great style. This I am a true believer that 90s early 2000s is the worst golf style of all of the generations. You can go way back in time when they wore, you know, literally suits and pants, but like this 90s big baggy pants, you know, the hip hop generation was really coming through at that point. I didn't realize it got to the golf industry in the 90s sure too. Did.
I mean, some of the pants, I mean, I've never seen a 5-pleat pant before or whatever, but I mean, Jeff Sluman's
Adam Scott
pants
would have been way better in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
If he played in the 90s, you never would have heard of Tiger Woods because Adam Scott would have fit right in with his awful pants, but just his great golf swing would have won 10 Masters in a row.
Yeah, some of these pants, they look like sails. I mean, there was a lot of material going on. Like Jeff Sluman, I saw him, they showed one clip of him, and, you know, he's not the tallest guy in the world. And I was trying to figure out whether his pants were wider than he was tall based on what they looked
so
like.
Bad. But,
yeah, and Rocca's hat, you know, the Club Med hat. Which I don't know what, it was some sort of painter's cap or something. And, you know, frankly, you know, Tiger himself looked a little bit more athletic, but obviously a pretty, you know, he's a super slim guy in bulky pants and things. And thankfully he turned it around from a style perspective. But certainly when you look through the crowd, you went, wow, how'd I live through that era?
Also fluff too. Like there was like,
yeah,
fluff is like 3 fluffs as what he is now. I get he's like a 75-year-old man that, you know, Jim Furyk should probably let retire, like force him to retire at this point. Did I ever tell a story on the podcast here about Fluff not being able to pick up his cigarette at the Canadian Open?
I think you did, actually.
Yeah, couldn't even bend over to get it. That's how old this guy is. And he's just massive back then. It's crazy to even think about. Fluff's probably was at that point, I mean, just as famous as Tiger. He's probably the most famous caddy of all time, you could even say.
Yeah, for sure. And you could see, you know, even as you watch the broadcast, you know, how much Fluff was involved. They made mention of it too, of, you know, what guidance he was for Tiger, being the fact that he was chasing his first major. And really, that's what made this compelling. If this was Tiger's second run at Augusta with, you know, a 10-stroke lead, I don't know if people would watch it maybe as much, but because they knew it was his first opportunity to, you know, win a major, and chances were he was going to win a major, you could hear the announcers talking about it going, you know, Peter Costas was saying, you know, this guy's going to win a Grand Slam there, you know, he's going to win more titles. And I think that's what made it compelling at that point was he was a different athlete. He was out driving everybody by 25 yards on average. You know, he was averaging 324 during that week and nobody else was over 300. And you could see how many wedges he was hitting into the greens. And now you understand why they started to Tiger proof the golf course, as they said, because, you know, at 6,800 yards at that point, it was not going to contain him. And, you know, him end up shooting 18 under and being 22 under for the last 63 holes, that got everybody's head turning really, really quickly.
Absolutely. It was cool to watch. I think the gear was cool. It's crazy to think that this wasn't actually Tiger's only win without Nike clubs. He did end up winning his next Masters with a full bag of Titleist clubs as well. But this was more of that mixed bag. And Golf WRX did a great what's in the bag for every one of Tiger's wins at Augusta National. This one had, you know, you had some Titleist clubs. You obviously had that Scotty Cameron that everyone knows and loves. Mizuno irons all over the place. It was interesting. Go check out this article. It's really, really well done.
Yeah, and that Cobra driver, I remember after he won with that, he had that King Cobra driver, and it was one of the early oversized drivers. And man, sales for that, did they ever take off? I was in retail at that point, and we could not get enough of them in stock. And people, you know, despite the fact that a lot of the people probably shouldn't be playing a driver with a steel shaft and, you know, super low loft, didn't launch the ball very well, they wanted it anyways, because they felt that, you know, if this guy goes out here and destroys the best players in the world by 12 shots, that maybe there's some sort of magic that all of a sudden they're going to buy it and, you know, it's going to do something for their game.
What was the price tag on that back in the day? Do you remember?
Ooh, I'm going to say it was $199 in steel and $299 in graphite. I'm probably going to say it was in that range.
That's pretty crazy. That's high if you think about it.
I mean, you think about it. You're right.
Put it at, you could double that. People probably would have bought it. The other cool thing I like to note here was, you know, the true temper dynamic gold tour shaft, you know, even back then, still just a staple in so many pros' bags, and obviously Tiger had it throughout the Masters. It was a really cool watch. I highly recommend going back and watching that one. I plan on watching all of Tiger's wins going up to whenever the Masters is, right now in November, but yeah. You never know, right? You do never know. But one thing to note, they don't even have the 2019 one on YouTube. What's up with that? That's awful. That's a bogey.
Not yet. I mean, they do the official film of it. They're doing a rebroadcast of it. You're going to see it on ESPN this week. And then I assume after that, they will add it to the archives, the 50 years of Masters final round broadcasts that are on the Masters YouTube page. I don't have official word on that, but that's when I would assume it gets up there. And I think certainly that was such a surprising one. Really, if you look at all them, you know, 97 and now 2019, the bookends so far, I think those are the two that sort of really, capture people's attention. And I know, I'm with you. 2019, I'm going to be watching that a few times just to really see, maybe did that actually happen? Because it's hard to believe it actually did.
It is true. Well, I highly recommend everyone goes back and watch these. We're going to watch a couple more tournaments each week just to kind of break them down. I think we'll take a little bit of a break from the Masters. The sting of it being postponed this weekend. Mm-hmm. I think we need a little bit of a break from what we should have been watching. And maybe we'll watch some U.S. Opens. Who knows, some players. Maybe we'll just watch like an old Michelob Ultra Open from back in the day. Who knows? We'll watch anything, but if you have any suggestions of some fun tournaments we can find online, please let us know. Why don't we grab a quick break? Last week, we did hint at a little game we're going to play, our top five players we're most worried about coming out of quarantine. We obviously need a tip of the week as well to wrap this up. So we're going to grab a break and we'll be right back. All right, Scotty, we hinted about doing this last week. This came out of, I think we were talking about Lee Westwood at the time, and I just kind of hinted, what if we talked about the five players we're most worried about coming out of quarantine and why, which was pretty fun to do, and we have completely different lists.
We do.
So let's go one by one here.
Sure.
I'll start with the man that got it all started, Lee Westwood. Lee, I believe, runs his own winery. If not, he shows off his bottles of wine all the time.
I don't know if he has any inventory left.
Yeah, he might not. That could be a concern. Could be getting into the old Opus at this point. Lee likes to drink. He's been up and down in his weight in his career, to be nice. Not that I can say anything. I did a workout today and almost died.
How'd that go?
Oh, not good. We're not going to get too far into it. I should be on your list. Luckily, I made it off your list. You kind of hinted at that last week.
Not about it.
Thankfully, I'm not on your list. But Lee Westwood's my first one. And, you know, he was playing really well, too. And that's the worst part. He's playing really well. You know, we have a Ryder Cup this year. Maybe it helps him get on the Ryder Cup. Who knows? But Lee Westwood's my first pick.
All right. Well, I went with Sungjae Im. Sungjae, we've talked about a lot on this podcast just because he was playing every single week. And, you know, we've made mention of it, the fact that, he's only living in hotels. So everybody's sort of concerned, where's Sungjae living now?
Hey, what do you think he does, right? He's probably in a hotel just putting.
Probably. I mean,
which would help him because he's not a great putter.
No, but yeah, I mean, he's a guy because he plays like every week and so much. And, you know, he's transient for lifestyle. I mean, you know, does he go out and buy too big of a house? I don't know what happens to him. But yeah, I'd be concerned that, you know, of all the people that I know that might be kind of wearing a hole in their rug just because they're going stir crazy, I think Sungjae is probably like bursting to get out of his house and get back to the golf course.
I think that's fair. I am worried about Sungjae. He's probably just, you know, that meme where the guy's sitting on the swing set alone, sitting at the yes. park alone. I can just see that being Sungjae right now, just not knowing what to do. My next pick is Eddie Pepperell. Pretty much just repeat what I said from Lee Westwood, yeah, and you're pretty much going to get Eddie Pepperell. Eddie can drunk tweet with the best of them already, let alone in quarantine bored. He's actually been quieter than lately. I don't know what's up with that. Maybe his wife or his girlfriend's locking it down. He's just spending more time with his dog. But Eddie, who knows about Eddie?
Yeah, we'll see. My second one, I went with Shane Lowry. You know what? Here's the thing. The Open, we know, is postponed.
Two-year champ. Going to be running for 2 years. Yeah,
exactly. So that means he's got extra time with the claret jug. And we know what a good time he had with the claret jug. You know, taking it back to his hometown, having some great parties. And, you know, an Irishman with the claret jug is, you know, a recipe for a lot of fun. And I think he's going to enjoy retaining the claret jug for that much longer. So what his condition is by the time he gets done, you know, I don't expect he's going to be maybe paying attention to his game a lot. So I'm a little concerned what he's going to look like and how he's going to play when this kind of passes.
You can see we're kind of on a trend. Sungjae went,
I see that.
Was a different way. And I'm going to continue on this trend with GMAC here. Graham McDowell. Graham owns a restaurant, which is awesome. But unfortunately, I doubt people are able to go to that restaurant. So someone's got to drink the wine in the restaurant and eat the food in the restaurant before it goes bad. And maybe Graham's doing just that in a little bit more. Again, player that was playing well, obviously, after that Canadian Open and just getting into the Open last year, and not one that wants a break. But Graham McDowell is my third pick, just similar to concerns to his other fellow mates above.
Yeah, and he's got something to look forward to now in that lock-in for the Masters in the top 50. He's locked into that, so he's earned a spot now for the Masters in November. So he's got definitely something to look forward to there. My third one is sort of on a, you know, I'll say he's sort of on the Sungjae sort of theme. It's Bryson DeChambeau, and I mean, I'm just worried that he's going to be, you know, trying to maybe, you know, do a double PhD or something while he's away. Maybe his mathematical formulas are kind of burning his brain too much while he's on this break. And, you know, he's maybe, you know, maybe it gives him too much time to think, let's say that. And not that he doesn't take a lot of time to think as it is when he's playing on the golf course, but this gives him more time. So when this is all over, what does he come out with? What sort of thing is he exploring right now from a scientific standpoint related to his golf game that he's going to try and to apply when this is all over? And what kind of contraptions are we going to see him drag to the driving range when he plays his first event back?
Yeah, who knows? I thought you were going to go in the direction that I'm going to go with my next player. Brooks Koepka is my next concern. Now, there's positives here. Brooks was hurt. He's got time to recover. That's a positive. The other side I'm thinking of is, A, Brooks doesn't even like to practice anyway. So now he's never practicing, I would assume. B, he just likes to look good. He might come out in an extra large shirt that looks like it's painted on. He's going to be as big as he's ever been. Is he even going to be able to swing around his body? He's just going to be ripped to shreds. But like he likes to get big. You know, he's not as Bryson said, He doesn't even have a six pack. I mean, he's got four trophies sitting in his front room, but, you know, he doesn't have that six pack. So I'm a little bit worried about Brooks. Is his golf swing just going to be completely gone? Is this the end of Brooks Koepka as we know it? Or is he just going to bulk up and come out there and overpower everything?
I mean, he could be Mr. Olympia by the time this is over. We don't know. I mean,
heavy lifting.
Yeah, I mean, we could see some really big physical transformations. So the fourth guy I've got, probably you're not going to see that. Louis Oosthuizen is my guy here, and he's the total opposite of those guys. Super relaxed, loves to spend time on his farm, on his tractor, out doing stuff.
Oh, I'm afraid. He's so happy right now. There's no way.
I'm sure he is.
He might not come back.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. He might get on his tractor, just point it, you know, towards the horizon and not come back. I mean, that's the thing. You know, I think I'm more worried here for the rest of us that we don't get to see a sweet swing for the rest of his career, because he's going to go, yeah, I'm happy on the farm. I'm good. I've enjoyed these number of months away, and I think I'm going to stay here.
Yeah, I could see that. That's a good pick. Louis on the farm. I'm going to pick a duo here as my last pick, because you can't have one without the other.
No.
Joel Damon and Gino Bonelli. Gino has been on a tear since the PGA Tour shut down. He's similar to Eddie in the way of drunk tweeting. The two of them getting together would be bad. And Joel, same thing. He likes to tell people how rich he is in a very funny way. And I'm sure he's enjoying some nice bottles of wine and just having a good time. And, you know, both of these guys are characters. I'm sure both of them are fine. I don't even think this changes their lifestyle actually at all, to be honest with you.
Why not?
Maybe these are two horrible picks.
I don't know. I mean, my last pick is sort of in that vein, because obviously he's involved a lot on the social media side of it. Damon and Bonelli doing a lot of things on social media. Max Homa is my last pick. He's been so busy, you know, roasting people's golf swings, and so busy on social. I think he's been on 472 podcasts. Not this one yet, but I guess we'll have to work on that.
You know, he's two.
Yeah, exactly. So he's been so busy with all that. I don't know if he'll wander back into the game either.
Yeah, who knows? Did you see he did something for charity? Somebody asked if they donated X amount of money, would he shave his arms? And they somehow double, triple, quadrupled the amount of money, and he ended up having to shave his arms and his legs. And this is a hairy man. So Max is... Maybe he'll be more aerodynamic when he comes back, though. Who knows? That was our five players we're concerned about coming out of quarantine. Maybe next week we'll break down our three players that we think, or five players we think that are making the most out of this, that actually this benefits the most. I'll give you a quick hint. Tiger Woods is just loving this right now, just healing up. Did see a photo of him pumping his own gas in Florida. Looked good.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that was a story, but anyways, it's Tiger Woods,
I guess. It's the golf industry, and there's nothing else going on. Give him this. Get rid of the white belt, Tiger. Come on, man. All right, why don't we hit up the tip of the week, and we'll wrap this episode up.
Just a quick break to thank our sponsor this week. This episode is brought to you by TaylorMade and the all-new Sim Driver. This year, TaylorMade wanted to find golfers more speed and forgiveness in any way, shape, or form, and shape one. So they went and changed the driver head, which allowed them to make it both fast and forgiving where you need it in the downswing. It's called Sim, and TaylorMade's tour players are loving it. But the real reason they changed the shape was to help make all golfers better. The all-new Sim driver, visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca to learn more about the all-new Sim family. All right, just finishing up the show here with a little bit of a tip of the week. Inside still, obviously, we're not able to get outside too much, but you can get out to your yard. So you can still do a lot of things with your golf swing if your weather's decent where you are. One thing I'd recommend a lot of people to work on is their footwork this time of year. And this is a good opportunity to do that. You don't necessarily have to be hitting a golf ball. You can just be making a swing, and you can do it even without a club as well. But one of the things that I want to point out to a lot of people is that it's not only important that you transfer your weight or transfer your pressure in your golf swing, it's when it happens as well. And this is a little tip, a little bit for your backswing. And really what we want to do is when we're taking our backswing, and let's think of us having the golf club in our left hand or our right hand. Let's think, you know, making our normal swing, whatever side you are, a lefty or righty. As you go to make your backswing, you get yourself up to about waist high where your lead arm is parallel to the ground. That's when you want the amount of pressure to be moving into your trail side being the side slide away from the target. And really, we want to do that a little bit earlier in our swing. So think about that. As soon as you get the club sort of by waist high, you want all the pressure that you're going to transfer to already be into your trail side. Get it in there early, and chances are you're just going to have a better body movement. You're going to have better sequencing. You're going to hit the ball further and more consistently.
That's a great tip. I just thought about this as you were going. I said you don't need a club, but I assume a lot of people are using their backyards to chip and putt right now. People that make lawn fertilizer are just going to come out of this quarantine loaded, just rich because of the amount of divots. I was just taking a couple practice swings with a wedge the other day in my backyard just to like at least feel a golf club in my hand. Just pelts coming over my neighbor's fence. Oh, it was bad. The wife's going to kill me by the time.
Yeah, I think, mats and nets are sold out online everywhere. And for those people that can't manage to find a mat or something that they can hit off of, you're right. They're going to be in that situation. We're going to go out and see a lot of holes in their backyards as we head into the springtime. We're going to definitely find out very quickly who the golfers are. I know in my neighborhood, just a few doors down, I walked down a path and I saw, a whole bunch of clubs out there. And I looked at the guy's lawn and you're right. His wife is not going to be happy, but thankfully I think his dog is, because I think he's now got a place to bury his bones.
Absolutely. My dog's going to love it. Just going to dig a bunch of holes, and I hate that. All right, folks. Well, that's it for this episode. We'd love to hear your feedback. Is there a tournament you want us to watch? Is there something you want us to break down? Is there a game you want us to play? We're open for business right now, because I assume right now the PGA Tour, they've made their announcements. Everything's kind of paused for a little bit. You're not going to hear something new next week, I don't assume. Do you see anything coming, Scott?
No, I don't really. I think we're just going to build on this. They've talked about some of the events sort of coming, June time for some of the PGA Tour events. We'll probably see something a little bit more concrete, but I don't expect anything early. So we've got lots of time to fill, lots of fun that we can have. And you know what? Getting the feedback from our listeners is fantastic. And anything they can suggest for us that's fun is going to be fun for the rest of the listeners as well.
Absolutely. Send it our way and we'll love to hear it. Other than that, that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback on whatever app you're using to listen to this podcast. Other than that, we will be back next week. See you then. Some ocean, a day like today, my boat's lost in the ocean. Have another.